and it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR Arts and Entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming, and on this edition of the program, music from Celtic Thunder in conversation with Damian McGinty. Damian McGinty was one of the original members of the group, but at the age of 14, not part of the original intention of the group. We'll hear about the current iteration of the band and touch on some items Damian has touched on in the past, but maybe a different side to these moments. Moments, Damian, that's a tease toward your latest release called Moments. So, at the Celtic Thunder website, I read that the original intent was to feature a group of men from Ireland and Scotland who range in age from 21 to 42, featuring songs that celebrate a common Celtic heritage, and just a beautiful write-up. Beautiful, great. We have Celtic Woman, now let's get a male ensemble. The thing is, you ended up in Celtic Thunder at the age of 14, so that kind of blows away the whole age 21 to 42 range. My question, Damian, is did anyone really talk to you about, you know, say, adding a young face to be there for the younger audience? Or by the time you were a part of it, you know, that's just how it was?
That's a good question. I think, you know, at the very, very start, going back to when we were cast, David, which was 2007, I remember the story now, and I've heard the story quite well from Phil Coulter, who was our original musical director. Mm-hmm. And Phil said that Sharon Brown, Celtic Thunder's producer, and she also created Celtic Woman. So she's kind of over both of these brands, franchises, whatever you kind of want to call them at this point. Mm-hmm. And she came to Phil and she said, I need five men. I need somebody to represent Scotland, and I need Irish, and I need Celtic, and I need five men. And I don't believe at that point that she kind of thought, I need four men and one child. But what had actually happened is, as it was just meant to be, I guess, 6 months previous to this conversation, Phil Coulter had gotten a hold of a very amateur record that I'd made when I was 13 years old. I won a local competition and got to make a few songs in the studio. So Phil's a dairyman, like myself. And so a good family friend, and I mean, the world's very small, but Derry itself is even smaller. Never, you know, it's 6 degrees of separation. So I made this record, very amateur, and I didn't really know at this point. All I knew is that I loved singing. You know, I had no idea that I wanted to make a career out of it. But I made this record, and it got in the hands from a close friend. It got in the hands of Phil Coulter. And Phil always tells the story that, you know, every week on his desk would land hundreds of albums from around the country, around the world, people trying to either get his opinion or get his attention or whatever it might be. And he said this album landed on his desk. And because of who it came from, a great mutual friend, a gentleman called Jim Ruddy, he sort of thought that I sort of have to listen to this because I know Jim, and Jim's going to be calling me up next week saying, hey, listen, did you listen to this record? I say, he said, the strangest thing happened. He said, I played one song, and he said, I played all 14 songs.
Ooh.
He says, I had never done that before. So then it kind of advanced from there where Phil got in touch with me and my family at that point because I'm 14. And Celtic Thunder was not a thing yet, or Celtic Man at the time, so be it. It wasn't a thing yet, but Phil had basically said to my parents, don't be putting Damian into these artificial shows, like kind of keep him on ice for now. I'm going to do something. I just don't quite know what it is yet, but keep him on ice. 6 months later, Sharon had a conversation with Phil. I need five men. And Phil turned around and said, you need four. I have something in my pocket. I think he's perfect for this. He is 14, but I think that makes it exciting. That makes it creative. That spans the life experiences, spans the demographics. It spans where I'm coming from, my point of view. So yeah, it ended up being 14 was the youngest. And at that time, I think Big George would have been 39. So yeah. 25 years between the youngest and the oldest.
George Donaldson there.
George Donaldson, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How did you handle school? Was it correspondence or lots and lots of flights back and forth? How was that handled for you?
Yeah, it was a bit of everything, David. I mean, it was a lot of flights back and forth, but mainly what I had to do was gather 3 months of work. If we were going on a 3 or 4 month tour, it was my responsibility to kind of go around the school and gather 3 or 4 months of work. And then Celtic Thunder brought a tutor on the road for me. So, I mean, I was essentially homeschooled on the road every day.
So your time as a 14, 15, 16-year-old, all of the rest of the cast was old enough to go out for the nightlife. And while many may focus on you not being old enough to hit the clubs, I would really think, well, beyond the homeschooling and all, I think that at that age you'd be just as content playing video games at the hotel, not really jealous to go along with Keith or whomever.
Honestly, you're not wrong. Like, I never really had my head turned by any of that stuff, David. You know, I was very content. It was also, everything was so foreign to me. I'd never been to America before. I'd never seen all these places. So every single day was something new because we were in a new state, a new city, new people, new experience, new climates, new environments. So every single day was like a learning experience. So it was kind of a lot to take in and digest anyway. So after a show, I actually did quite enjoy being at the back of the bus and just playing Xbox. You know, at the time it was, I don't even know if Xbox is still around, but I would just play FIFA on Xbox back then. So, and I mean, there was a lot of partying going on at that period of time during what we were doing because, you know, it was big time for a lot of people. A lot of people had never done this. You know, we were selling out Radio City two nights in a row. The demand was huge. It was bigger than I think anybody probably thought it would or could be. So naturally what came with that, which I understand now, but at the time I didn't have my head turned, but naturally what came with that was this adrenaline that was sky high. So if you're going into a day off, you know, people that were in their 20s or in their 30s, which was the entire tour company, really, they would be out having a big time. And yeah, I'd be at the back of the bus playing Xbox.
But mostly content to do that. So that's actually kind of cool. And I've heard so many people say, oh my gosh, poor kid, but it would almost be a relief to get all the, quote, older guys away from you for just a split second. You know, actually, speaking of which, now, I interviewed you way back when. I mean, you were fairly new to the group at the KVCR studios. And then you've also been interviewed a couple of times by Lillian Vasquez as well from KVCR. But now, I seem to recall either myself or her, I feel like I remember George or somebody else kind of taking you under their wing, as it were, where, you know, they weren't going out to the clubs, but they were making sure that you had a responsible adult around. Am I remembering wrong?
You're actually spot on, and that would have been Paul Byram.
Ladies and gentlemen, do me one of your big ones. Give a warm welcome to my very dearest friend, Mr. Damien McGinty.
To be fair, everybody played their part. I'd be like, singling someone out for individual attention feels a little incorrect. But Paul Byram was particularly very intentional and made time for me. Just made sure that I was okay, you know, more than anybody else. And that's just the truth. And now that I'm older, kind of reflecting on it, I'm very, very grateful that he was around. Very grateful that he did take the time. He would skip nights out sometimes and, like, we'd go to the cinema. And, you know, very sort of, at the time, what felt like small moments, small intentions, but they play a big part. We've got
We're closer than pages that stick in a book. We're closer than ripples that lay in a brook.
You know, it made me feel involved. It made me feel like I had somebody that kind of understood my period of life, because it would have been easy to sort of be left behind and be the 15 or 16 year old that was just on the road and was more of a hindrance to most people than anything else. You know, it would have been easy to feel like that. And Paul did a very, very good job of making sure that I was taken care of.
Nice. Well, you were a part of the Celtic Thunder lineup for quite some time. And then after being away for a bit, returned for, I believe it was the Legacy Tour, and this was, coming back around, filling the spots created by the untimely death of George Donaldson. Is this when you came back?
It would have been Legacy, yeah, which I think the tour was actually the best of tour. So it was just kind of a celebration of about 10 years of music, I think, at that point. And that show turned into Celtic Thunder Legacy, which would have aired on PBS, and, you know, the records were called Legacy and all that stuff. And yeah, that was the end of my cycle on Glee. It had been talked about for a couple of years about me coming back to Celtic and kind of doing a bit of work again. But I decided to take like an extended break from the company for probably 5 or 6 years, just because I wanted to explore other things. I was doing the whole Hollywood thing. I was, you know, on TV shows, I was making movies, and then started writing my own journey in terms of writing music, like just things like that. And then we got around then to sort of felt right a couple of years after George had passed. It was presented to me as, you know, sort of this new chapter of Celtic Thunder, which is exactly what it was, David. And it was nice to revisit it as an early 20-year-old. You know, it's even nicer now as an early 30-year-old, but it was nice to revisit it as an early 20-year-old and sort of have a new, I guess, appreciation for it. You know, I really sort of enjoyed it. So I sort of always say I've got two experiences in Celtic Thunder. One of them is a very inexperienced youngster that had his eyes opened and was learning everything every day on the job. And then the second experience is coming back with a lot of experience in my back pocket, a lot of the industry, a lot of fame from Glee, which just catapulted my personal profile into this sort of new stratosphere that I didn't really know existed. So that was kind of chapter two for me, which was a really, really enjoyable one.
I definitely have a few questions directly related to Glee. Just a little bit about this current tour. This is you, Neil Byrne, Emmett Cahill, and Ronan Scollard. I didn't realize way back when just how, for lack of a better way of saying it, it was formulaic in that they picked somebody who would represent, say, pop opera, another guy, Keith Harkin, he was the heartthrob type. You know, different types of music coming from the different members. Is this still the case, or is it pretty much we've got a variety of people now providing a variety of types of music?
I would say it's a bit of both. It's probably somewhere in the middle, David. I think we have developed and grown a lot in these kind of last 5 or 6 years into a new phase now of what we are. But for example, Emmett still very much so represents the more classical brand of music. You know, we've kind of always had that within CT. You know, it was Paul Byrum, it was Emmett O'Hanlon, now it's Emmett Cahill. That's always something that we've wanted to represent. Neil Byrne brings the kind of storytelling, folky kind of vibe. Ronan Scollard, he brings something completely different than anybody we've ever had in the group. You know, he's incredibly talented, he's a great artist, he's a great musician. He plays all types of instruments, and quite frankly, he's a great vocalist. So he brings a lot to the table. And then at this point, I've been around the block. You know, I kind of wear a few different hats and kind of do whatever the group needs or whatever is required. You know, if we need the younger kind of music, I can bring it to the table at this point as well. I feel like if we need storytelling, if we need some sort of deeper stuff, emotional stuff, I feel like I can bring that as well, which is a very fortunate place to be in as an artist, to sort of have a well to pull all these different things from if they're needed, you know?
Absolutely.
So I think it's a good question, because I think we just have organically at this point, because we've been around now for 16-17 years, which is a long time, we've grown and developed. It's different than what it was in 2007, and I think an important step for us as a brand and as musicians was recognizing that Odyssey, which is this tour, and who we are now is different from 2007. We're not trying to be 2007 anymore, you know, and it would be, I think it would be remiss. 2007 Celtic Thunder will never be again. You know, that night in the Helix, when we shot the first special, when we made the first record, when I was 14, when George was with us, God bless his soul, all those different things, that was a formula and a product that could only exist because of the lineup of the timing in 2007. You know, the magic that was in the room, it'll never happen again. What we are now is experienced musicians that can bring a fantastic night of music, that can bring experienced night of music, storytelling, take the audience to a place that they've never been to, or they feel like they need an escape. We can tell them stories, we can bring them to Ireland to enhance their Celtic roots, you know, and I think we are different now than what we used to be, and that's okay. You know, it's a different product, it's developed, it's kind of come full circle in that sense, and it feels like we are artistically in a really, really good spot, and we really enjoy what we do.
And anybody and everybody that I talk to, it's they are excited to see Celtic Thunder, or they are excited to have just seen Celtic Thunder. And whether it's part of the lineup that you are with, any iteration of Celtic Thunder, people just come back overjoyed. And nobody has come back saying, yeah, this is what I did Friday. Damn it. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Damian McGinty, one of the original members and back with the group Celtic Thunder with their Odyssey tour, stopping in Riverside and several other venues in the region soon. More just ahead as KVC Arts continues. Back now with KVC Arts, I'm David Fleming. Find many past KVC Arts through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. On this edition of the program, I'm speaking with Damian McGinty with Celtic Thunder. Celtic Thunder has several stops in our area, including Riverside, quite soon. Now, Damian, you were with the group for quite some time, since the inception, and then left for a bit to pursue other things, but then came back to the lineup. So when you came back, were there many songs that suddenly had to be back in the set list? Because they were songs that you used to do. Like, oh, this is one Damien did way back when. Let's get it back in.
Yeah, there was songs like Buho and Ernia, for example, which I did originally when I was 14, you know, before my voice broke. That was one of the very first songs I did for the group. That's a song that gets requested a lot, you know, all the time. That's one of those ones that has kind of stood the test of time and people still love it. So kind of when I came back around, that was a song that was requested that people wanted to hear. Falling Slowly, I guess, was another one as well that was kind of in the mix that people wanted to hear, which is from the musical Once. And then, you know, I think people always kind of associate me with the group with some of the more teeny bopper stuff, like Breaking Up Is Hard to Do and Bye Bye Babies from the Bay City Rollers and
kind of
the more tongue-in-cheek stuff, you know. So naturally, it's just kind of coincides, I feel like, with my existence in the group, is that this is what people expect, you know. And I have to say that's a side of the performance that I love to give, so it's not something that I don't enjoy or it's an effort that I have to do. I actually really enjoy that.
Are any of those tunes you sang as a boy with Celtic Thunder what we would call, quote, out of your range these days? Or do you just transpose to a different key, or maybe even octave by this point?
At this point, the stuff that we first recorded when we were 14, we've just made new keys for them. It's just like, yeah, we've recreated the tracks, the productions. It's just a new arrangement because, you know, it's a different voice.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different, that instrument I was using when I was 14 is not the instrument I use when I'm today, 31, you know? So it's just, it requires a completely different thing, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and also now, depending on the timing of when this airs, you know what, I have to say, I think this Monday, I've been told, is your 32nd birthday.
That is true.
Yeah.
You've got your dates lined up correctly, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's my partner in crime here, Sandy Hodela. She lined this interview up, and she's quite the follower as well, and so she spilled the beans on that one, and I can cut this out, or I can just leave it for the world to know. That's on you.
You can leave it for the world to know. David, I've got a stance. The next 20 years, I will be 30-something.
That's according to which bio we read.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, another thing about this current iteration of Celtic Thunder. Okay, we're going to get Irish classic tunes like Grace, Rare Old Times, The Fields of Athenry, among others. Do those of you who have original material get a chance to bust it out, or is it Scottish and Irish standards and past Celtic Thunder hits?
Well, yes, the stuff I write, and I do write a lot of music these days, I do love to write a lot of music, the stuff I write doesn't necessarily exist within Celtic Thunder's world. Like, I kind of do a little more kind of storytelling, pop, singer-songwriter kind of vibe. So, as an individual, as Damien McGinty, that doesn't really exist too well within like a Celtic Thunder set list, as that's just not the style of music that I like to write or that I feel like I can strongly represent. But Neil Byrne actually writes a song or two that's going to be in the show, and there's a song called Farewell that's about his uncle that went to Comenham Jail in Ireland in the, I think, the 17th or the 18th century. Mm. And it's a famous story. It's about his uncle John Mulvey. And he's written a song about that called Farewell, and it's a gorgeous, gorgeous song, really, really powerful. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the interesting phase that we're about to enter, David, is that there's a bit more artistry in there. There's a bit more songwriting from ourselves. There's a bit more, I suppose, of our hearts within the set list. You know, it's not just covers anymore. And maybe at some point I'll give it a go and maybe write a bit of music for Celtic Thunder itself. But I just haven't quite went down that path yet on a personal level. But there will be original music on the night, yes.
Nice. You know what? So this is not an original one, but it does come from your past and would be just absolutely perfect for a group calling themselves Celtic Thunder, Being Green. How about that?
Yes, that is true. That comes from my past. That's the first song I sang on Glee, actually.
It's not that easy being green, having to spend each day the color of the leaves.
Many people watched Glee, or at least knew of it. This is the TV show about the Glee Club at the fictitious William McKinley High School in the not-so-fictitious state of Ohio. But they may not know of the Glee Project. So if you would please talk about what this was, your involvement with it, and then, of course, what that led to for you.
Yeah, the Glee Project. Well, first of all, it was a TV show, a reality show. But it was slightly different than your standard reality show. And this came to my doorstep when I was 18. So I've been doing Celtic Thunder for 4 years. I kind of reached a place where, first of all, I was young. I was, and I don't want this to sound any way negative at all, and I am very, very ambitious. I mean, I want to try different things in my life, and I never want to stand still. That's just never who I've been. So when I was 18, I was still loving Celtic Thunder. I always have. But I was ambitious in the sense that I just wanted to try different things. And the Glee Project came to my door. It was a reality show that was not like your American Idols or The Voice. It was none of that. It was a boot camp for kids in front of the producers and the creators of Glee. So basically 40,000 kids went into this show.
Oh my God.
Auditioned for it. And they made a TV show from the top 12. There was a theme, like theatricality or vulnerability or danceability or tenacity or whatever it might be. And yeah, you had to like make a music video, you had to act in the music video, you had to sing, you had to do all these different things. But it was all pre-filmed, none of this was live. And yeah, each week the creators and producers of Glee were able to watch back all the footage and kind of watch the work that we were doing. There would be a bottom three, which would require a sing-off in front of Ryan Murphy, who created Glee, and he would send somebody home each week. So yeah, it was one of the craziest experiences I'll probably ever do. It was unbelievable. It's great to reflect on. I mean, I'm so happy I did it. I ended up winning it, which I would just put it down to luck of the Irish. Maybe other people would put it down to a few extra things than that, but it was a lot of right place, right time, David. You know, it just felt right. It was one of those things that I felt in my gut all along.
Yeah.
It just felt like it was meant to happen. And then, yeah, that got me on Glee. It won me a 7-episode arc. But I did much more than that. I think I did 25, 26 episodes or something over a period of 2 or 3 years. So yeah, just an all-around great experience. Obviously grew a lot from it personally, professionally, and something that I reflect on very, very fondly.
So this led to the creation of Rory Flanagan. You said maybe up to 25 episodes. At some point, I read that you were in basically for the bulk of season 3 and then one episode for season 4. Was what we saw in season 4 something which had actually been shot for season 3 and they just kind of pulled it back in? Okay, Rory's going, we have to write him out somehow. Or was this, you know, did you actually wrap season 3, take time off, and then come back for one episode?
No, I'd wrap season 3.
Oh.
We had made kind of a mutual decision where it sort of felt like the character's arc was naturally coming to an end of where it was. The way it works, basically, with TV shows is for season 3, I was signed up as a guest star, which means you're contractually obligated each episode, and each episode you get a new contract. So it's kind of a rolling basis. It's pretty much the least secure job you can have, because in theory, you can be written out at any moment.
Oh.
So, like, from the Glee Project, I won 7 episodes. And I remember thinking, what's going to happen after episode 7? You know? And it just kept rolling. It just kept rolling. There was no conversation. Just kept rolling. Contract kept coming. Script kept coming. Just kept rolling.
Wow.
What was happening is we were reaching the end of season 3, and the character was just kind of starting to do less and less, because, you know, you got to keep in mind that I entered this TV show whenever there was already 8, 9, 10 main characters that had been distinguished and loved by a huge fan base over a period of 3 years already. So it was very, very difficult to kind of make a mark, almost, and to kind of make an impression. And I did make an impression. I'm very proud of the work I did there. But just in terms of it being long-term, and in terms of where artistically I wanted to be, it wasn't quite just headed in that direction. So the conversations at the end of season 3 were just something along the lines of, listen, I want some sort of commitment that this is going to be like a series regular with storylines that artistically are going to be fulfilling, or is the other option to basically fill a spot in the choir room? Because if that's the case, I personally don't want to do that. I really, personally, at this point in my life, don't care what you're going to pay me. I just would rather be doing something that I love to do rather than sitting in a choir room watching other people do it. That's just not what I want to do.
Yeah.
So it was just like a mutual thing where we were like, let's just not sign on for now. Let's call it a day. But it came around again where I did an episode in season 4 where I was scripted into like a Christmas episode. And then, I mean, I was asked back again in season 6 for a few episodes, but I couldn't do it. I was actually on tour with Celtic Thunder when we were playing like the Fox Theater in Atlanta to 5,000 or 6,000 people. And then I remember my agent called me and I was like, you know, the promoter is not going to be very happy if I call them. And I'm like, hey, I know there's 5,000 or 6,000 people coming tonight, but I'm off to Hollywood to shoot an episode of Glee. It just wasn't going to go very well, so it didn't quite work out.
I think if they had really extended Rory's timeline too terribly far, they would have had him failing a grade in school. Otherwise, I mean, it's a high school. Come on, you know?
That's well, true. Yeah. That's very, very true.
Okay, lastly, social media for people to follow or your personal website. And this is for both you and Celtic Thunder, I have to say. Facebook, are you a tweeter? Those sorts of things.
Yeah, website CelticThunder.com, and that's to see all the tour dates, and we're announcing a new live record very soon that we're releasing this year, so don't miss out on that. Yeah. And then obviously the tour, we're touring through November, so we can't wait. And then my own website is DamianMcGinty.com, and Instagram is Damian McGinty, Facebook, Damian McGinty, Twitter, Damian McGinty, really one-dimensional over here. And likewise with Celtic Thunder, you'll find Celtic Thunder on Instagram, on Facebook, and on Twitter as well.
So. Perfect. Damian, thank you so much. This was a lot more time than I expected. I appreciate your being gracious enough to give me this extra time. And what this is going to mean is that I'll be splitting this up into two different shows. One to promote your appearance in Riverside and really four or five other areas within an hour and a half or so drive. But I mean, Riverside for us, that's just 12 minutes down the road. I appreciate this time. And I had a wonderful time talking with you once again.
Perfect. Likewise, David. I really appreciate it. Thank you for your time. And yeah, great conversation. Great talking to you. I'm just too far from where you are. I want to come home. Let me go home. It'll all be over. I'll be home tonight. I'm coming back home.
For this edition of KVC Arts, I've been speaking with Damian McGinty. We spoke not only about Celtic Thunder and Glee, but also his most recent solo release, which we'll address on a near future edition of KVC Arts. A reminder that Celtic Thunder will be in our region quite soon, with stops in Riverside on the 13th, Bakersfield on the 14th, LA on the 15th, and El Cajon on the 16th. More at CelticThunder.com. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Damian McGinty, and here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Miley Palacios, Sandy Hodela, and Shireen Awad. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, and most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Be sure to check out our calendar with other events in the region at our homepage, kvcrnews.org, or you can go directly there at kvcrnews.org/calendar. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, behind us now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Go to kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.